They've taken the world by storm. But after 6 years, K-pop boy band BTS say it's time for a break. After a string of global hits, the group are taking their first long holiday, and their managers have asked fans to respect their privacy should they see them in a, quote, chance encounter. The Group of Seven's management company, Big Hit Entertainment, said the group will recharge and, quote, prepare to present themselves anew as musicians and creators. Big Hit did not say how long BTS's hiatus would be, but the band's website says their next world tour is in Saudi Arabia in October.
The Trump administration on Monday finalized changes to the U.S. Endangered Species Act, the 1970s-era wildlife protection law credited with bringing species including bald eagles, gray whales, and grizzly bears back from the brink of extinction. The White House and Republican lawmakers say the changes will modernize the law. Conservation groups say they'll threaten at-risk species. The Endangered Species Act has long been a source of frustration for drillers, miners, and loggers who want to work on land that's off-limits to development.
Tensions over Hong Kong and its sovereignty spilled over into the fashion industry. Chinese celebrities cut ties with Coach and Givenchy because they identify Hong Kong and Taiwan as independent nations. Americans may not be familiar with Liu Wen, but the Victoria's Secret supermodel represents Coach in China. And she wrote on the microblogging site Weibo Monday, she ended her endorsement deal with American handbag and fashion brand over a t-shirt that lists Taiwan as a country. Beijing considers the island a renegade province.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's August the 13th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We'll try to cover as much business news as we can as we move through the 5 o'clock hour this morning here on WGN. And we'll hit the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as well on the program today. We'll meet a couple of Northwestern grads who are creating batteries of the future. Carrie Hayner and Francis Wang will join us momentarily to talk about NanoGraph. A little bit later in the program, we will turn our focus to sleep, the business of sleep. If you're going to be the best in business, you really need a good night's sleep. And we will talk to one of the lead researchers of some new science at the University of Illinois about who gets better sleep and how to get better sleep. That'll be at about 5:38 this morning. Rosalba Hernandez, assistant professor at the University of Illinois, will be with us in our second segment this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell will ring today on Wall Street, again with futures in the red. All eyes will be on the stock market today after stocks dropped yesterday over concerns about the economy and trade. There were times when the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down more than 400 points, falling below the 26,000 mark. At the closing bell, the Dow lost 392 points to close at 25,898. The NASDAQ fell 96. The S&P was down about 36 points. This morning, as we look at the futures market, Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures are off anywhere from a third to nearly a half a percent on the NASDAQ. Dow futures down 82 points this morning. As we look around the rest of the globe, in Asia, lots of red on the screen as well. The Nikkei off nearly 229 points in Japan, down more than a percent. In Hong Kong, markets are lower by 2%, down nearly 543 points on the Hang Seng. Again, more protests in Hong Kong. We'll get to some of that this morning as well. In China, markets off nearly a half a percent. The Shanghai down nearly 18 points. In Europe, markets are in the red as well. In Germany, France, and in London. In London, the FTSE down nearly a half a percent. In Germany, markets off nearly a percent. And in France, off nearly a half a percent. Oil is trading at $54.71 a barrel. You heard in the opening montage the pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong staging more protests and more rallies today. A new rally at the city's airport has caused that busy hub to shut down entirely again. The news coming out of the area is not good this morning. The leaders have been calling for calm, but their protests are continuing there. Yesterday, the country's embattled leader warned protesters that they were heading down a path of no return. But again, another day of big protests in the airport shut down in Hong Kong again this morning. Verizon has a deal to sell Tumblr to Automattic, the company that owns the online publishing tool WordPress. The deal is not a moneymaker for Verizon. Axios is reporting one source puts the sale price well below $20 million and below $10 million, maybe even as low as $2 to $3 million. Yahoo bought Tumblr for more than $1 billion in 2013. Verizon acquired it when the telecom giant took over Yahoo in 2017. Verizon has been trying to unload Tumblr for some time, but through May, the only bidder to show public interest was Pornhub. Verizon banned pornographic content on Tumblr last year. Tyson Foods planning to rebuild that plant in Kansas that suffered a devastating fire. The meat processing plant suffered major damage when a fire broke out on Friday. Company officials say the damage assessment and cleanup is underway. Full-time active employees will be paid weekly until production resumes. That was the new announcement yesterday, and thankfully no one was injured in the fire. Let's begin this morning front and center with some local entrepreneurs at Northwestern University who've been developing a new battery technology that could extend the life of lithium batteries. Carrie Hayner is with us this morning. Carrie, good morning. Thank you for being on. Happy to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here, and we're excited to speak to you today about the great technology that we've been developing.
Carrie is the co-founder and chief technology officer of NanoGraph. Give us a sense of what NanoGraph is. I mean, I teased it out by saying this is technology that will maybe make our cell phones have a battery charge longer. What are you up to?
That's exactly correct, Steve. What we do at NanoGraph is try to improve the lifetime that you can have out of a lithium-ion battery. So this would be ranging anywhere from a cell phone that can last all day, all the way to an electric vehicle that can provide a longer driving range and ease your range anxiety that you would have.
Talk to us a little bit about how the technology works. And again, with the eye that a lot of us are not as technically savvy as you, what's the magic here?
Great. Yeah, so the magic here, we're basically replacing one of the two magic materials that are inside of a battery with a newer version. We're using all abundant elements. These are all things that you can, you know, process and dig out of the ground and are used commercially in a wide variety of other areas and industries. And what we've been able to find that we can do is that with the right formulation and the right magic in here, we're able to power devices up to 30% longer or provide up to 30% more energy per charge. So if you're, working on your cell phone, you're on the run, you have a flight to catch, with hours, you don't have to worry about trying to find an outlet. You can just simply go on with your day and have an additional 30% charge before you start to run dry.
Carrie, is this something that batteries will have to be redesigned to or better? Will it become a new battery, or will this be some sort of add-on to the technology?
That's a great question. Over the last 7 years, one of the things that we've learned is for a battery and for our company to be successful, it has to be exactly drop-in. With today's technologies out there. And so the team and I have worked extremely hard to make sure that all of the materials that we develop can be put directly into the existing manufacturing lines and put into a customer's pockets with no changes at all. So from the consumable perceivable level, there will be absolutely no changes required to get this extra benefit out.
Francis Wang is back with us on the line, CEO of NanoGraph. Francis, first, good morning. Thank you for being on with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Good morning.
So talk to us a little bit about, I understand you're more the financial brains behind all of this, the organizational brains to a certain extent. Talk to us about the challenges of getting to this point, and also, as you look at this technology perhaps being a giant game changer, what the future might hold.
Yeah, Steve, you know, one of the biggest challenges in lithium ion is the fact that technology cycles are so long. So, you often hear about new lithium-ion battery technologies in the news, but it takes, on average, historically, anywhere from 10 to 20 years from the time a technology is invented until it actually meets the market. And so for startup companies like NanoGraph, that can be a challenge. So being in the right place at the right time is very important. And in the case of our company and technology, we think we are at the right time, right place. Silicon is entering the market, and so it's been known for quite some time, a few decades. And we're beginning to see applications and batteries contain small amounts of silicon. So it's a big deal, and I think it's going to change nanograph's world as well as the battery world.
Francis, how has the process been? Talk to us a little bit about the entrepreneurial part of this, getting off the ground and also moving on with the different sort of investigations and the science that goes with this and the connection to Northwestern as well.
Yeah, so, you know, any startup company, it's certainly very tough in the beginning, and Kerry can attest to that. Kerry is one of the original founders. We're a startup company that came out of Northwestern University. It was actually several Kellogg and science-related students got together in a class, and they won a business competition where that gave the company enough funding to get going. Kerry was one of the early ones. He actually left school for a bit to pursue the company and get it off the ground. And, you know, there's always challenges as an entrepreneur. There's times where one needs to pivot, adjust the technology, at least in the early days. But at least where we are now, we have a technology that works. We're able to scale that. We have production facilities in Japan. And we have what we call a high-fidelity MVP, which means we have a prototype that fits into existing applications, and you can kind of see the difference that our technology provides.
Kerry, on those terms, you know, I mentioned, and we've been talking about cell phones, mobile phones, but as you've alluded to, this is a big deal in other applications as well. The funding has come from the places like Ford and General Motors and Fiat Chrysler and the U.S. Department of Energy. All of those organizations know that for cars and drones and energy storage, this is a potential mother load.
Absolutely. I think what we're seeing is that across all these fields over the last decade, there's just been an explosion in the lithium-ion battery industry. You know, 10 years ago, you might only have a cell phone in your pocket or perhaps a laptop. And today, you know, you can add smartwatches, Bluetooth headphones, tablets, electric scooters. The battery industry has, you know, taken off dramatically. I mean, in fact, it's expected to roughly double every 3 years or so. And so the field is growing huge. It's driven predominantly through the electric vehicles. And so we're very pleased to be working with organizations such as the USABC, which is a consortium of Ford, Fiat, Chrysler, GM, and the Department of Energy to help develop these new materials and bring them to market, especially for the electric vehicles, and help produce a clean, greener future for everyone around.
Kerry Hayner, co-founder and chief technology officer of Nanograph, and Francis Wang, the CEO of Nanograph, on with us this morning. Northwestern grads creating batteries of the future, potentially extending the life of lithium ion batteries, lithium batteries. I want to go back to our conversation here. Francis, to you, what has it been like putting all of this together? I know there's the science part of this, but there's also, you have to sort of have the business background as well. And how do you sort of communicate, and we've been trying to do it this morning, all of the science to investors who may not know all of the science?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's been exciting. You know, oftentimes we need to take Perry and I need to take very complex items and kind of put them in simple terms. And oftentimes, for example, in our case, things like graphene. Graphene is a part of our technology. It's very thin, like paper, and oftentimes we'll use examples like paper and the slatting of paper to help explain some of the fundamental mechanisms that go on with our technology.
Graphene, if people have ever used a number two pencil, that's the same stuff, or almost the same stuff, right?
It's similar. So graphite is what is typically used in things like pencils. Graphene won the Nobel Prize back in 2012. So it's actually just a single atomic layer of carbon. And this is a technology that's beginning to get more attention over time, that over time goes on. And we're using it in our technology to help improve our battery materials.
Kerry, this is a technology, this is an element that, a form of carbon that's available all over the planet. It's not something that we're running out of. So when you talk about the technology and that the importance to your technology, it's a big one, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It's very helpful in our technology, and it's something that we've been developing here, starting initially at Northwestern, and then obviously separately as Nanograph for about more than a decade now. How to really harness all of the best properties that we can get out of this graphene, knowing that it's earth abundant, and knowing that this can really help extend the lifetime of batteries. And so it's been really one of the keys that we have focused on, and I think the team has done a tremendous job. Really kind of harnessing and showing its value for applications in energy storage over the last few years.
We talked earlier about how long a charge might last. There's a cool graphic in some of the materials we saw from Northwestern. And this is, again, I think how you get people's attention, if you travel on a regular lithium battery from Chicago to, let's say, Columbus is about as far as you get, 310 miles with this silicon graphene anode, about 465 miles, all the way to Pittsburgh. So that's a good way to get people's attention, isn't it?
Yeah, I think as was Francis was mentioning earlier, I think really just being able to show, a lot of these simple infographics on what a technology can do, I think really helps sells it for people. So that, 80% of Americans drive less than 40 miles a day. But still, just seeing that, hey, you can get this dramatic improvement in your driving range, you can make it all the way to Pittsburgh on one charge, I think that really helps kind of calm some of the anxiety that people have about electric vehicles. And, and we just really want to do what we can in our part at Nanograph to help accelerate that adoption.
Francis, people always say we will not be able to keep using this kind of technology in the future unless we get a handle on improving storage, especially for solar cells and that sort of thing. Is this technology of yours, is it scalable? And so, well, as we look to that potential future, does this solve for that?
It helps to. So renewables like solar and wind all require grid scale energy storage. So this is very large storage of energy. Technologies like ours allow them to store more energy. It also makes it the cost much more attractive for renewable energy as well. So it is part of that. We expect the first phase of the impact to be in electric vehicles. But certainly once that's begun, we imagine that grid-scale energy storage would be just on the horizon.
Well, gentlemen, this is very exciting. We wish you both and the company all of the best of luck, and shout out to Northwestern as well, because I know they've had some involvement in this and helping encourage you. We appreciate you being on today.
Thank you, Steve.
Yes, thank you very much.
Kerry Hayner, co-founder and chief technology officer at Nanograph, and Francis Wang, the CEO of Nanograph. You can find more online at Nanograph. That's at nanograf.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. I hope you had a good night's sleep. Our next conversation is going to focus a little bit on quality sleep. Being best at the office oftentimes requires at least a good 7 hours of sleep. I know some of you CEOs listening out there probably get a little less than that. I've talked to people who get about 4 hours of sleep, but it could be your personality that helps you get the best sleep. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit about this, Rosalba Hernandez, assistant professor at the School of Social Work at the University of Illinois. Rosalba, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
I said personality, but I don't know if personality is the right word to describe what your research has found. Talk to us a little bit about what kind of person, what characteristics of the person that gets the best sleep make the best sleep.
So in this particular study, and you're right, we perceive dispositional, what we call dispositional optimism, as a trait, something that you're born with and that doesn't change too much unless you intervene upon it. And so what we mean by optimism, it's the idea that you believe that positive things will occur in the future, that you're hopeful about things that are coming in life.
So this sleep study included several thousand people, right? And you kind of watched them sleep at night and examined them and asked them questions. What was the lead findings of this?
So we had had a total of 3,540 participants. And what we found is that after following them over a five-year period, those that were reporting more optimism using a scale, the life orientation test, that they were more likely to experience good sleep throughout those 5 years. And this is through self-report, them telling us about their sleep quality during the night.
So talk to us a little bit about the index that you just mentioned, the self, what was it again?
So the way that we measure optimism is using a self-report scale. So it's called the life orientation test. And we basically ask six different questions about how they perceive the future. And then there's three positively worded, three negatively worded, and then we add them up to get a total score of from six least optimistic to 30 very optimistic.
So give us a sense of like an example of one of those questions.
Let's see here. So, for example, one question is, let me see here. I'm always optimistic about my future. That's a positively worded item. Negatively worded, I hardly expect things to go my way. So it's really focusing on future happenings and how you view them.
What is the science that's going on here? Is it that people who are not as optimistic as others are constantly thinking about the negativity and that's impacting their brain being able to shut down? Or explain that for us.
Yeah, one of the reasons we were interested in optimism is that there's a lot of science going on now. For many, many years, we really focused on the negative. How does depression, anxiety, stress affect not only sleep but also our health? Things like blood pressure, mortality. And it's only now in the last 20 years or so that we're starting to shift and we're starting to look at positive psychological attributes. So things like optimism, happiness. And we believe that there are multiple mechanisms. One, like you mentioned, is that people have better coping skills and they employ these more often and they're able to sleep better. Another possibility is that people who are more optimistic tend to engage in healthier behaviors. Things like exercise, healthy eating, and this could contribute directly to sleep. Those that exercise more often sleep better, and also those that have a healthier diet and nutrition are able to have higher levels of sleep quality.
The latest latest science from the Centers for Disease Control indicates that maybe one in three of us have problems getting adequate sleep. That has all kinds of implications, doesn't it, in terms of health risks? I mentioned earlier, you know, coming to work, being sleepy and being on your toes at work. There are all kinds of potential problems here, right?
Yes. So sleep is a big risk factor for many chronic illnesses. One of the biggest that we see in the U.S. is cardiovascular disease. So it's implicated with, you know, higher odds of high blood pressure, higher odds of diabetes, developing diabetes. So it's very important, sleep as a very important marker for future development of disease. So like you were saying at the beginning, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours is really the recommended. And then another implication of the study is, so if optimism is associated with sleep and health, why do we care? Is it something that we can change, or are we just born with this particular trait? So that's an important question that we're looking into.
Yeah, and that would obviously be a big deal, because if it's something that I am born into, the chances of me changing it are not good.
Exactly. So what we're seeing is that yes, some psychological traits are determined by genetics. But the good news for the listeners is that 40% of the variance that we see in well-being can be altered by intentional behaviors that are teachable. So, for example, one thing that we have is that you can think about three good things at the end of the day. What three good things happened to me today? So thinking about good things that are happening is a good way to start increasing your emotional well-being, and traits like optimism, happiness, and positive emotion.
I bet you're thinking, because I am as I'm having this conversation with you, that the other things that kind of we've heard recently impacting our sleep, perhaps checking our phones before we go to bed, maybe being on social media before going to bed, maybe playing video games before sleeping, all of those things can impact our brain in ways. Are you thinking there might be a connection there as well to our optimism level?
Yes, definitely. You know, it's recommended that, you know, 2 hours before you're ready to go to bed, that it's not a good idea to check your phone. One is social media, for example, which can get you thinking about, you know, what's happening in life, but also those who check work email. If it's, you know, 10 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock at night and you see that you have an email and you start thinking about the tasks that you have to do the next day, that that could be detrimental to your sleep. So definitely trying to disconnect before you go to sleep is a good idea.
You mentioned also exercise. That seems like a no-brainer. Some other things, perhaps, yoga or meditation. Would any of these things help?
Yes. So that's another. So there's 8 different skill sets that we've tested that increase positive emotion and that could potentially have an effect on sleep. And you've sort of hit one in the nail, which is mindfulness and meditation. One thing that we recommend is that people really be mindful and to be in the moment, to not necessarily think about what's going to happen in the future or the tasks that we need to complete in the future or things that already happened, but to be in the present moment. So we recommend, so for example, when people are eating, to really be in the moment and to savor that which they're eating versus just some, many times we don't even think about the things that we're doing. And taking some time to meditate, either in the morning or in the evening for 10 minutes or so. The other thing is gratitude, thinking about all the good things that have happened in life and expressing that gratitude to family and friends is also shown to increase positive emotion.
Rosalba, we appreciate you being on with us this morning, and we look forward to more of your research. And to everyone else, let's get a good night's sleep tonight. Thank you for being on with us.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Rosalba Hernandez, assistant professor at the School of Social Work at the University of Illinois.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market, Dow's futures improving this morning heading to the opening bell. Dow futures down 23 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures improving as well, off now just a fraction on the S&P and about 0.25% on the NASDAQ. Let's get an update on agriculture and commodities. And with that, here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We have so much to share this morning. I don't really know where to begin, but, well, let's start with the weekly crop progress report. Corn in dough stage now at 39% compared with a 5-year average of 61%. Corn condition good to excellent, 57%. That's unchanged from a week ago. Soybean conditions at 54% good to excellent, about the same as a week ago. And the soybeans that are setting pods now at 54% compared to a 5-year average of 76%. For wheat, USDA raised its forecast of total production to 1,980,000,000 bushels. Well, you have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Let's get an update now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, and it is August the 13th. On the calendar today, the Small Business Optimism Index for July leads off the reports. Small business analysts see the index softening slightly from June's reading, but still remaining strong. The business Small Business Optimism Index being released right about now. July's inflation rate will be released as well today. Economists are forecasting a 0.2% increase over June and a 1.7% gain over July of 2018. On the our earnings calendar today, the earnings that we will see include JD.com and Tilray. Tomorrow is a big day as well as we look forward to retail information coming first from China and then on Thursday from the United States. A lot of earnings tomorrow, leading things off with Macy's and then on Thursday, JCPenney and Walmart. Just some of the things that could move the markets. Focusing in on today, especially this August the 13th, 2019.